Okay, yes, today is July 7th, 2021. This is an interview with Alberto Vargas. We are here in his office at 209 Ingram Hall on UW-Madison's campus. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the University Archives. Alberto, for sound quality purposes, can we start by having you say your name and spell your last name?
Yeah, my name is Alberto Vargas, V as in Victory, A-R-G-A-S.
Great. Perfect. So, as I said before we turned on the recorder, there's a list of questions that I gave you in advance, and I just want to start with the first one. It's kind of a broad question, and that's what brought you here to UW-Madison?
Right. So I started working as academic staff here on campus in 2005. But actually, my association with the university goes way back to 1989 when we came here with my wife. We came to get our PhDs here. A professor in the geography department, Diana Lieberman, who we met in Mexico, she told us about UW. My wife was interested in doing a PhD in geography, and I found great colleagues here in the Latin American studies. That had a different name then, but in the Institute for Environmental Studies, the Land Tenure Center, the Forestry Department, that's where I focus my studies to get my PhD. So I'm very familiar with UW from that end. Finished my degree in 1998. Then I worked for 9 years for the state of Wisconsin, for the Department of Administration, federal pass-through program to work with the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, conservation issues. But during those 9 years, I was also maintaining close contact with UW. I was an honorary fellow with the Institute for Environmental Studies and the Latin American Studies for all those years. And I had a lot of colleagues here working in these issues with the Great Lakes, with the coastal program. So I've seen my coming to UW at this long arc of different activities and whatever as academic staff since 2005.
Thank you for that. So the next question is again kind of broad, but it's what factors led to your work interest, but also to your research interest too. I'm interested in knowing how you got involved in the research that you did too.
Yeah, well, I am from Mexico, and I studied general agriculture for my bachelor's. Then I work in the highlands in Mexico, and then in the tropics too. I went to Texas A&M for a master's degree, and then work for about 4 years in Washington, D.C. for international environmental organizations, sort of moving away from expanding, working from agriculture, more work on natural resource conservation, environmental issues. So that sort of defined my general interest. And for my research, I really wanted to put together all these interests in science, in social issues, in economic issues. And I worked in the Yucatan Peninsula on a forestry project that is actually still functioning. It's still actually sort of how to harvest sustainably tropical forests. So that was my interest, and that's what I focused my research when I was here at UW. After finishing the PhD, as I said, I moved to the coastal program that apparently it might not have a lot of relation, but for me, it was just like people and resources in Mexico, and it was just like people and resources in Wisconsin, in the Great Lakes. It was a great experience for me to get to know the states. Moving from international issues to local issues in Wisconsin was a really great learning experience for me.
And then how did you become involved in the work that you did? How did you become, basically, how did you eventually get the job that you have now here?
Yeah, that's a great question. As I said, I maintained contact with the university as this being an honorary fellow, but I was also a liaison with researchers at the university that were working in some projects with federal funding. So I was working in that state agency that received federal funds. So I had a lot of interaction with colleagues here at on campus. But for my current job, I basically received a call from a colleague saying we have 2 months to write a big proposal, and the person who was working here left, and we wonder if you would be interested in applying. And I did. I mean, I did immediately because I knew the program well, and for me it was like a dream job, like going back to work in Latin America, and with all the training, practical training, we can say that I learned in the Department of Administration, it prepared me really well to do what we actually had to do, but to start with this job, to write a big federal proposal. So it was challenging, but we succeeded, and we've been receiving that federal grant for several cycles, or it's like a 4-year cycle. This is a program funded by the U.S. Department of Education to basically support learning indigenous languages of Latin America, or what they call less commonly taught languages, some indigenous and also Portuguese. Supporting students, supporting research, outreach activities. So that's pretty much how I got to work here in the program.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the next question is, you know, when asked, how do you describe what you do?
My job, it's mostly like 3 main components. The big one, I guess, is administration, writing these proposals, implementing the activities, submitting the reports, overseeing the budgets, making sure that the money is adequately allocated and reported, not only from this federal grant, but also from endowments that the program has. Scholarships for students, outreach activities. So this is a big part, the administration part, and overseeing the office. You see, we're a very small office. We're probably 3-4 people, but supervising the staff and supervising the language instructors. The other part is teaching. I teach 1 or 2 courses per semester. So some are pretty regular courses that I teach for the Institute for Environmental Studies. That's what I got my degree from, so I'm comfortable with that. And there's usually several students in my seminars that are interested in Latin America, so I sort of cover that part. And I also teach some more general courses on Latin America. And our weekly lecture series, we turn it into a 1-credit seminar. So I'm in charge of sort of doing the scheduling and sort of work with students to the additional activities related to that seminar. So that's the outreach part. And the other, I mean, that's the teaching part. And the other part is outreach and networking. That's something that I really enjoy doing. Is basically working with any faculty or any student in any department that is interested in Latin America. So we support their research, we like bring invited speakers. We do film series, sort of to support students and faculty, but also for the general public that are interested in Latin America, sort of put out activities that might sort of increase or enhance the level of understanding about Latin America. So I really enjoy that part. So I work with colleagues in natural resources. That is an area. I mean, I was in the forestry department, so I know CALS, the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, the health sciences, all the social sciences, and the humanities. So we have, depending on how you count, we can have like about 100 faculty that are affiliated with our program, and different levels of involvement and engagement. But that's a big part of my job, to maintain that connection with faculty, and also with other Latin American studies programs in the nation. Like I was the president of the Consortium of Latin American Studies Program, sort of work with peer programs in Latin America. So that's another component of my work. So that's a long answer for what I do, but that's how I envision it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. So I'm going to ask this question directly. You sort of answered it in your three main components, but what are some of the things you do on a typical day?
Yeah, and there's very few like typical days, but there's always changing. But there's some regularities. Like again, the days that I teach, I spend a lot of time sort of preparing and delivering the lectures and improving every semester what I do. On Tuesdays we have our lecture series, so that's something that we do at noon every week. So I don't make sure that everything works, so that's another thing of a typical day. There is usually students that want to talk with us because they're interested in the program, either undergrads, and we have an undergrad advisor that works with them. I used to teach a course for undergraduates that I enjoyed very much teaching that, but I put it on hold when we had to write one of those proposals, and we had another faculty that took over that course. But I still do the teaching, sort of that's part of my weekly day. And there's usually something to be reported or prepared to be reported, so that's another part of my typical days. And we have our staff meetings, of course, or working with our hourly students. The way our center is structured, we have a faculty director that rotates every 3 years, and I work with the director when they come. And we also have, as I mentioned, this undergrad advisor. Actually, her full title is Academic Services and Programming Manager, who's been working for us for many years, and student hourly. So we have our staff meeting, making sure that everybody is prepared to do what we have to do that week. And then, depending on the demands, there might be some weeks that we do a little more of some of the other things. So that's usually what a typical day is.
Okay. I'd like to ask a couple questions about that. What sort of tasks do your student hourlies do?
Oh, they usually focus on the social media, learning what activities are in different units on campus related to Latin America, and we put that in a weekly a newsletter or email that we send every week, sort of to let people know about what we have coming that week or the next few weeks. That's usually what our student hourly do. Or sometimes like specific projects, like organizing some of our audiovisual materials, or like special reports that we have to prepare. Usually the issues related to outreach and
Okay. Could you talk more about the lecture series, like how it got started and what types of lectures or presentations someone might see over the course of a
year? That's actually something that it was already in existence when I came to the program. It was like, as all the other area studies here, just across the hall, we have a room set up for that. So we each one has like 1 hour every week to have an invited speaker, or it could be from anywhere. Some of that we invite specifically to come to campus to give a talk, or professors, or students that are sort of in advanced levels mm-hmm. of their studies that they want to share their research. So it's very diverse and different topics, and students that enroll in the program like it. And we have a good audience also of members from the community, that some of them are regular, that they come to our series. So, and we cover like a great variety of topics, again, somebody from a country in Latin America who's working in a specific issue, they present what they do, or a political issue that is happening at that moment. We try to invite somebody to sort of present their view mm-hmm. on what is happening. We're very open to receive any diverse perspectives, like anybody who wants to put something forward, they're welcome, and the stimulate debate and discussion. So that's what our lecture series consists of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we record them from when we turn to virtual because of COVID. Then we did all our programming in Zoom, so we'll probably get to that later, but yep. That's
and actually, you know, I think we can probably talk about that right now. First, I'll ask a general question about technology, and that's, you know, I know you've been here, you know, 15-16 years now. It's a long period of time for changes in technology, so I'm wondering how, or if even, the changes in technology has affected the way you've worked.
Yes, and we try to stay current and adapt as we go. I remember just the first years when I got into the program to use like a common drive in a mm-hmm. server to have all our documents there, rather than sending documents back and forth by email or printing them, or it's just like having that's a problem in itself, because some of those drives can get out of hand, but we try to use them judiciously. We have a film festival mm-hmm. that we use, and having digital copies of some of the films, the production, it also is something new that we are using. Of course, now more recently, just the virtual environment for teaching and for lectures, it's been major. So it was a big adjustment that we'll have to do, but we discovered it has some advantages, like we increase substantially our audience because we have more people just connecting rather than having to come here and that. And I think we're gearing towards do some hybrid model that we have the room set up. We hope to have in-person lectures that could be streamed. So that's another change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned COVID in the previous answer, and I think since one of the changes in technology rapidly occurred because of COVID, I think I would like to ask just a general question about how COVID, how this global pandemic has affected your work, you know, over the last 16, 17 months.
Yeah, we made it work, and it was, again, just hit the world running. We were in the middle of the semester. We had to finish our courses, and we had to have our lectures continue in the virtual format, our staff meetings sort of making them virtual. It was a big adjustment that I think we made it work well. Again, as I said, it has some advantages, but it has also some limitations. It's different, definitely not the same as having in-person staff meetings that sort of run after several weeks, or doing that in Zoom. And some administrative tasks that were very efficient before, just going down the hall, go to the third floor, talk to the person, and solve it in 10, 15 minutes. Now it's like sending an email, hoping that the person is reading emails among many other emails that they're getting, and then waiting for a response. Administratively was sort of awkward to get some things that before were really easily resolved. Now we had to send some of the documents, had to scan the document, had to send it, had to do all those things that we just had to learn how to make it work.
Thank you. So now I'm going to ask some specific questions about being academic staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is, were you involved in any academic staff governance or groups?
Since I started, I was interested like in the teaching institute, the academic institute that they had. I tried to attend as much as possible to the programs that they put together. But more recently, I became more involved. I was a mentor last year. That it was very, very rewarding. Right now, I'm in a committee of the Social Sciences and Humanities Area Review Committee for next year. I'm also in the Equity and Diversity Committee of the International Division. So I try to respond to all the invitations that I get from that. Again, some of them are more general, but I try to get involved with that. Yeah.
What do you feel that you, when you become involved in these things, what do you feel like you're able to give? And then what also do you get or do you learn from being involved in things like this?
Yeah, having been at a university for years, it gives you certain perspective that you can sort of pass on to people that are new. I'm talking specifically about the mentorship. Mm-hmm. I always learn by talking with anybody in campus, other academic staff, colleagues that are in other units, either at a personal level or just like for some joint projects that we have. I always learn about that. So it's a two-way learning and in giving the. Try to put things into perspective, trying to give some maybe historical context of how things work for some units and that. So that's what I could tell. It's very, very rewarding for me to do that kind of activities.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So the next question is also related to academic staff, and that's, has your job or your time here, have you thought or reflected about the relationship between faculty and staff? And if you have, what are your thoughts about that relationship?
Yes, as I mentioned before, my job involves having contact with faculty because of the structure of the program. I mean, we have a faculty director that changes every 3 years, and we have about 100 affiliated faculty that work with us. So I'm in constant contact with faculty on that. And as a matter of fact, part of our mission is to support faculty through our endowments that that we have. For example, one of our endowments comes from a major foundation, the Tinker Foundation, and that's an endowment given to 5 universities in the U.S. to bring scholars from Latin America, one or 2 scholars from Latin America per year, to teach a course and to do their research. So for that, I have to work with faculty because faculty had to nominate one of these visiting professors. So we go through the process of nomination, and then we have committees. We have that oversee the endowments that we have. So I work a lot with faculty on these. I enjoy tremendously working with faculty and seeing the variety of the areas that they cover and that. So I'm also being able to teach in a way, sort of you're considered part of the faculty in a way. So, mm-hmm. sort of, but I know that structure is quite different, not having to deal with the tenure situation. That's different. I understand that from that perspective. But I am very very comfortable and very pleased with the relationship between with faculty. I think it's Wisconsin is a great place that opens a lot of room for that type of collaboration.
You mentioned earlier, you just talked about the good relationship you've had with faculty, and you talked about that sometimes there's up to 100 faculty that interact with this center because of the work that mm-hmm. they do relate to the work that yeah. your center is promoting. So what do you think you offer faculty in these interactions?
I could answer at different levels. One is that I often participate in committees, graduate committees, both at the master's and at PhD levels. So I tend to work with the faculty and with the student, and because I am in these sort of in between area, and I was a student here also, I can provide that perspective to the committees. We are very open for any suggestion from faculty of initiatives that they have. Like some of them want to publish a book, or invite a speaker, or get a guest lecturer for their class, or convene a conference. Sometimes we provide like logistical support for that type of initiatives from faculty. So that's something that we do here as a program. I consider that part of our mission, to support faculty in that regard. exploring new venues or new ideas. Sometimes we know of folks or issues that could be of benefit to that faculty, and we sort of make that bridge, that connection. I guess that's what I could say that I contribute to these relations with faculty.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So now I want to talk about, I mean, the reason why we're here is there's an Academic Staff Award winners oral history project. Mm-hmm. Last year you won the Chancellor's Award for Excellence in Service to the University. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, winning that award from, you know, when you first heard about it and through the ceremony itself.
Yeah, for me it was very rewarding and very pleasing to be nominated and to receive the award. I knew that I was nominated because my director talked to me. She said, "Well, we're thinking of nominating you for an award." And the first thing I said is, "No, I think we should nominate our academic services a programming manager. It's another academic staff that we have in our office. I think we should nominate her." And she said, no, I already talked with that person, and we said that we're going to nominate you. But again, you never know who, or I was not expecting that I was going to be selected. But so it was, for me, it was very rewarding. It was great, especially for this type of award for service, because that's exactly what I sense and I see my role here of service. So to be recognized for that, it was really, really satisfying, really great. And it also put into perspective what I've been doing since I was a student, but also when I work for the state government. Part of my work was also to be of service to the university, because that was sort of how I saw my function, to be like in between, connecting this policy work with research work, supporting students that were doing research. So I did that. So I considered that it was part of the service. And coming here to the program and, yeah, basically sort of maintain this program to serve students, faculty, and the general public. It was really, really great to be recognized. It was a big honor for me to receive that award. And the ceremony was very meaningful with Chancellor Blank. And sort of just like, I never read the nominating packet. I don't know the letters of that, but I know that some folks that I respect a lot, they wrote letters, like the dean of the Institute for Environmental Studies that I work with quite a bit. It was really, really great to see that he wrote a letter for me, and on my behalf, and also a colleague in the College of the Menominee Nation that in the previous two cycles of this federal grant. These federal grants, sometimes they have like what they call competitive priorities, things that you, if you do, if you propose activities in that with that priority, you sort of increase your chances of getting that. And in the past two cycles, and each cycle is 4 years, one included the, like, work with minority-serving institutions. So Wisconsin, the minority-serving institutions in Wisconsin, one of them is the College of the Menominee Nation. And I just happened to have some contacts there, because in one of my seminars I had one student who was working with the college. I visited the college. So, but when the time came to write the proposal, it was like natural for me sort of to take the lead among all the area studies programs to establish this connection with the College of the Menominee Nation. And the president of the college now wrote a letter on my behalf to also that I was very honored that he did. So I'm just seeing snippets of some of the things that I do that somehow ended up in a packet that the committee saw that it was mm-hmm. worth giving me the award. So that's how
I wanted to ask you about that work with the College of the Menominee, because in the website that lists all the winners of uh-huh. you know, it said about you, you know, it said that's the center, the center is always invested in justice, equality, and human welfare. And one of the quotes was, these are Alberto's values, and they became the foundation of our center's excellence. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about, you know, this is kind of like looking sort of back and forward about your interest and the center's interest in justice, equity, diversity, inclusivity, and things like that.
Yes, well, let me try to foster understanding among students all the way from the undergrad level, the graduate level, to a region that is very complex, very diverse, and with a lot of challenges and problems, and also the relation between Latin America and the United States is also loaded historically, and there are some issues, the domestic issues that had to do with that long history. So doing anything we can to provide accurate information, broad context, historical analysis, so people are better equipped to interpret what they read in the news and the way they sort of go about how to respond to these issues of equity, diversity, social justice is very important. And it's not easy to do, because you could there are some misinformation or things that are inertia sort of legacies that are just there that require some clarification better. So that's sort of what we try to do. We have a very good working relations with the Chicano studies program here, that in a way there is like a gray area that we share, mm-hmm. but in a way these our centers were defined historically as we work south of the border and mm-hmm. they work sort of domestically, but again these distinctions are getting a little more blurred and sort of intertwined. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that we're seeing that require some collaborative work on mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
It also sounds like there's sometimes collaborative work, and maybe not direct collaborative work, with some of the other centers on this floor. Why do you feel it's important to not only connect, you know, maybe with Chicanx Latinx studies, which does have kind of this blurry, yeah. but some of these other centers that geographically don't really have a link with what your yeah. what your geography is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great question. And we work together quite well. I mean, the eight centers that are here in the international division, depending on what is happening, sometimes we work closer with other centers. Like years ago, for example, that was this interest in the BRICS in Brazil, Russia, India, and China. So, so we had like events and lecture series that sort of follow these countries, and it's still going. So, for example, right now we are doing some collaborative work with the Center for East Asian Studies, particularly because of the importance of China and Korea mm-hmm. in Latin America, some investments in that. So we tried to cover that part. This work that we're doing with the College of the Menominee Nation, we did it as a group. So we visited the college at the time that there was a delegation from Southeast Asian scholars here on campus. So we went to the college and we presented what we were doing in a sort of unified way. Right now we are sharing a project to respond to the need of the College of Menominee Nation to enrich their library collection. So we are as all the area studies, we're sort of responding to their requests, like what would be the most important book or materials that you would like to have in your library that explains that particular region. So that's some of the things that we do. And we get together periodically, and of course when there is a time for proposal writing, we work. Even though we compete with each other in a way, we see that as a way that that is better sort of to work together on this. And I mean, Madison is one of the universities in the U.S. with the highest number of area study center. So that reflects, in a way, the way we work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that affected in the last 16 months with the global pandemic, the collaboration with other centers?
No, not major. I think it's just like changed the format, but the collaboration continues. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's one more thing I want to ask before I see if there's anything you want to say. And I just found out about this as I was doing research, and that's that you had a role in launching the Mexico chapter of the Alumni Association.
Yes.
I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. That's one of the maintaining relations with alumni who come to campus and then return to their countries. The Wisconsin Alumni Association, of course, is very active on that. And I participated in the launching also of the Chilean chapter of students from Chile, that they're very, very, very active. So the idea came like, why don't we try to promote creation of a chapter in Mexico? And being from Mexico and an alumni, it's something that I wanted to do. So we had a couple of trips and talking with developing a list of who are the alumni, sort of gearing some interest among the alumni to participate in this group. We have a chat, a WhatsApp chat, that it has quite a bit of traffic. I mean, not a lot, but it's like weekly, several people comment on that. One of our, we can say, distinguished alumni, Professor Carlos Ursúa, that received his degree here in economics. He's coming next semester now in the fall of 2021 to teach a course, a graduate course for the La Follette public policy program. He was the keynote speaker in the launching of the Mexico chapter of the Alumni Association, because he was the Secretary of the Treasury for Mexico. For at that time he was, so people were really interested in hearing what he had to say, and we're happy to maintain that connection with the students. We have great we have alumni from UW that are doing wonderful things. We have a very close connection with the University of Guadalajara, with several programs that are ongoing, and we have one of the alumni from Mexico who He's also like affiliate faculty teaching courses for wildlife and ecology. Mm. So we try to follow interesting things that are happening in the regions of that. So that was with the Mexico chapter. We started some conversations with Colombia to set up another chapter, and that is on the works. Mm-hmm. But there's also, it could be with several countries for them. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for that. So my final question is do you have anything else you want to say about your time here at UW, academic staff, whatever, before we wrap up this oral history?
It's just like how satisfied and how proud I feel of UW and everything that it has to offer for growth and sort of contributing to dialogue and to further better understanding. It's a really rewarding place to be and I'm very, very pleased to be here at UW. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, Alberto, for your time. So this concludes the oral history with Alberto Vargas.